Hello everyone, and thank you for joining today's webinar, Decoding Brain Signals, How Azure Machine Learning Contributes to Neuroscience and Biomedical Research. Our presenters for today are Ye Hing, Hang Zhang, and Wei Hyung Tak. Before we begin, I'd like to cover a few housekeeping items. Today's presentation will run for about an hour, and the webinar is being recorded and will be available on demand within 48 hours. A copy of today's presentation and a recording link will be sent to you via email once the files are available. If you have any questions during the webcast, please enter your question in the Q&A widget on the left of your screen and click Submit. We'll try and get through as many questions as we can during the live broadcast. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Wei Hyung.
Thank you, Rahi. Thanks a lot, everyone, for joining this webinar. We appreciate your time and spending time with us on this call on trying to understand what does it mean to decode brain signal. Now, this webinar, just to provide the context, right, provides a summary of the joint work that we had with Dr. Rajesh, as well as Kai Miller from UW and Stanford, on figuring out how to use the data that they have collected from patients, right, and then being able to decode this data or signals that comes from the data, right, using the Cortana Intelligence Suite. Now, if we look at the human brain, for a long time, many of us have been studying what the human brain is, you know, which part of the human brain does what, and so on and so forth, right? And the human brain is really one of the most mysterious objects in the universe. If you look at it from different angles, there's about 100 billion neurons in a single human brain. And this is as much as the number of galaxies in the universe. Now, at any point in time, there's about 100 trillion synapses connecting all these neurons, and most importantly, electrical signals fires in this huge, massive network. But this signals and how it fires, right, really determines our behavior, how we perceive things, how we speak, and how we act. Now, over the years, advancement in the way we can decode or collect signals from the brain, right, has made a lot of things possible. For example, traditional signals for brain signal capture, they are mostly EEG cap that you see on the left on the screen. EEG cap are external, but often they are not very accurate, mainly because it's external and therefore you can't get a lot of signals, or it gets distracted by a lot of noise that happens in the physical environment. Now today, neurosurgeons routinely lay electrodes on the surface of the brains for patients. Specifically, most of the time it's epileptic patients, to collect this electrical signal directly from the inside of the brain. And the data from these sensors help the doctor pinpoint where in the brain the seizures start, and that helps them determine what is the right course of action for surgery. Now, but because these are cortical sensors, reading activity directly from the cortical surface of the brain, they are by far very, very accurate, and there could be hundreds of electrodes emitting time series data from the cortex at any point in time. Now, this signal, as I was sharing with you earlier, encodes our perception, our thoughts, and many a times our intent to act. And this work is really about how do we do it. Now, before we get into the specific of the work, let me introduce Dr. Kai Miller. Dr. Kai Miller, sometime back in January, published a paper, right, which you see on the screen. And essentially in this paper, he showed how you could almost read mice using this electrocortical signals. And combining with machine learning, it provides you with a very powerful way for understanding how our mind works. Now, to put that in perspective, let us show you a demo. Now, I'm going to switch to my screen, and this is going to take a while. So just hang on there while I switch to the demo screen. Now, what you see here is an app that we jointly built with Dr. Kai and Dr. Rajesh. And the point here is, given all this cortical signal that we're collecting from the brain, we do the following, right? One is we stream the data to the cloud and we'll share with you the architecture later. But more importantly, as and when the subject, right, who has already been instrumented with sickness, with sensors, right, will be asked to look at various images. So for example, here, we have a subject sitting here. And because we can't demonstrate this using the ECOG signal, we're showing it using an EEG cap. But the real setup is using an ECOG signal. So right now, what you're seeing here is that the subject is given images or shown images that are either a house or a face or an inverted house. Right. Now, at real time, these signals are collected from the brain. It is streamed, right? And an Azure machine learning experiment, right, in the back is continuously decoding the signal, which brings you to, hey, you know, whether this set of signals correspond to whether the subject is seeing a face and a house. And towards the end of this webinar, Hang will share with you, hey, you know, why does this matter? Why do we need to decode signal from the brain? But this just gives you an example of the app that we've jointly built with Dr. Kai and Dr. Rajesh. Now with that, I'm going to hand it over to Ye, who's going to share with you more specific details on what does it mean when the subject is looking at the house or the faces, and what does it mean to decode the signal. Ye, to you.
Thank you for the introduction. So I'm going to talk about the experiment setting, how we collect the data, and also how we re-implement the previous work that Dr. Kai did into the Azure platform. So in the clinical settings, when we collect the data, the patient will be shown a series of images. It is either a face or a house picture, which is called a stimulus. And every stimulus lasts about 400 milliseconds. The ECOG signal is collected before, during, and after each stimulus. And the task for this, for decoding the brain signal, is that if we only give a sequence of 800 millisecond ECOG signal, which is caused by one stimulus, can we predict what is the stimulus? Is it a face or is it a house shown to the patient? So this slide shows some more details about the data that we collected. So for the original CAS paper, there were 7 patient data used. And for the competition that we run on the Azure platform, we use additional 4 new patient data. And as we see that for different patients, the number of electrodes may vary, and the location of the electrode may vary as well. So this brings us the question, how we can build a model out of the existing data, how we can decode the brain signal. So the raw ECOG signal is noisy and difficult to find a consistent pattern. So it's natural to come out a solution that, how about build an average template that could capture the main response for certain electrode? If there is a change in the pattern of the main response template between the face and house impression, then there's a high chance for the model to differentiate the ECOG signal caused by those 2 stimulus. So the picture shown on the right is from the original paper Kai wrote. It shows that four average templates for electrodes placed in 4 different locations in the brain. And we can see that the main template responses for face and house are different after the onset of the stimulus. So this sounds a little bit complicated, right? But if we look at the overflow of how we build a model, it's a little bit more simpler. So given the ECOG signal, raw signal, we are going to build a signal template to get the main average response for each stimulus. Then once a new series of ECOG signal comes in, the raw signal will be used to compared with the signal template that we got from the training process. And then the similarity between the signal will be calculated and the prediction will be made. So I would like to mention that the original paper, the original code that we got from Kai is in MATLAB. But to import those MATLAB codes into the Azure platform, we need to convert it into R. And we are going to share some learnings how we do the code conversion, since MATLAB is quite common. It's quite common, commonly used by researchers in the university, and all the some doctors in the research area in the hospital. So MATLAB and R shares a lot of common features, but there's still something that we need to be taken care of when we do the code conversion. So what we did when we migrate the MATLAB code to R is that we use a MATLAB to R converter package in MATLAB, so it can give us a rough output of the converted R code. And but if we look closer into the code, we'll see that some part of the code can be converted correctly, but some part are not converted correctly. So we need to do a line-to-line manual conversion. And to make things better, if we want to do the write the R code really in R language, look, for example, we try to avoid the for loop in the R code, since it's not the best practice for the R languages if we use the for loop. So we use the apply function, which is a functional programming in R, and also if possible we try to use a vectorization in R as well. So there are some main differences between MATLAB and R that we want to explain. So the way that they return the computed function, computed result from the function are quite different in MATLAB and R. So in R, the output is only a single object. So if there are multiple objects needs to be returned, then R returns them within a list of objects. So we need to use the list data frame in the R to do this. But MATLAB returns the output as a set of variables, which can be shown in this example that we use. For example, there's a function called smooth basis. The output of MATLAB is a set of variables, but the R just embedded all those four variables into a list, and then return it back. When you want to utilize one of the output variables from this list, you need to unlist this variable. You need to unlist the list to get a real variable. And besides the way that they treat the computed result from the function are different, R also has the data frame as its core data structure. And it can give the name for columns instead of using the numeric index. So for example, if we want to select the height from a data frame that shows in this picture, we just need to get a dollar sign and then select the name of the column, and it It has its advantages, especially when we do a model building. We just give the name. We just select a certain name of the variables and then build a model instead of using the index of the metrics that MATLAB usually do. And also, the data frame can hold different data types for each column. It can combine the numeric variable together with a categorical variable. And the third thing that we need to be very cautious is that it's about the singleton index issue. So in R, if the metrics, if we just select, if the metrics we just select one single column, it does not treat it as a matrix anymore. It treats that as a vector. So if your subsequent script expects an output as a matrix, then we need to put a job equal to false to avoid the loop, can keep this vector still as a matrix. So this singleton index issue, we need to pay special attention to that when we do the code migration from MATLAB to R. So once we converted the SAS code, the MATLAB code to R, we did a comparison on the result. We can see that we can achieve almost the same accuracy as the original MATLAB code, so that we can guarantee that in our platform, we can achieve the same accuracy as what we have in the original paper. So then we are going to hand over to Wei Hong to show how we operationalize the solution on our platform.
Thanks a lot, Ye. Now, if you look at it, right, we have been collecting data from directly from the cortical surface of the brain, right? And many a times when we say cloud-connected brain today are no longer the realms of science fiction. Now, today, with a lot of the instrumentation available in the hospitals, you could have a potential to be able to stream signals from the brains in the various wards into a cloud service, not just to archive the data, but also to empower a lot of these neuroscientists to be able to analyze many of the signals in real time, and also being able to monitor and give better healthcare. Now, one of the things that we explore with Dr. Kai Miller as part of this project is how can we do that? What is the architecture for such an end-to-end system, and what are the technologies that are available that will allow you to do real-time machine learning? Now, what you're seeing here is an early architecture that we have been bouncing with Dr. Rajesh as well as Dr. Kai Miller. Is that we say, well, you have patients, and these patients are connected while they're warded in the hospital. And today, we could get some of this signal, right, in a non-disruptive manner and stream it off to a cloud service, right? And what you see here is essentially different services that are part of the Cortana Intelligence Suite, where you have massive amount of data being streamed into a ingestion point, which we call the Event Hub. And then once you have this data collected in Event Hub, you have the potential to be able to do real-time analytics using a service which we call Azure Stream Analytics. And Azure Stream Analytics today has powerful capabilities that allows you to integrate with the machine learning model that Ye was sharing earlier, so that every time a window of the brain signal comes in, we are able to decode in real time whether the patient is seeing a house, a face, or any object for that matter. Now, so then the question is, well, with such an architecture, what are the challenges that we face when we try to work this out then when we're doing the project, right? There are several challenges in operationalizing the solution. As you recall, Ye was sharing with you the frequency or how fast or rather the latency in which the data is arriving. Now, and if this is continuously being streamed to a real-time analytics job, we need the ability for the real-time analytics job to be able to provide results, right? Or rather the decoded percept, or rather the predicted response really quickly. Right? And today, with web services and with the round-trip time, you really have a challenge of, hey, you know, how soon can you predict? Two is, how soon can you get the result back to an application that we're showing you earlier, and then display it on the screen, right? And if you look at this slide, what we're saying is that, hey, you know, we did some initial benchmarking. From the app perspective, every time we make a call to the experiment that's been operationalized as a web service, typically, because there's a warm-up time, we have about a 7-second lag, right, from the initial call, but subsequent calls is all around 4 seconds. Now, that seems great, but if you want an application that's continuously responsive to what the patient is thinking, right, or perceiving, then you need something much faster than that in order to keep up with the high streaming rate that is being sent to the cloud, right? And therefore, what we explored, right, was to say, well, since we have an experiment and we have operationalized the experiment as a web service, why don't we have multiple web service endpoints? And therefore, every time a call comes in and we need to make this prediction, we invoke one of these, we incur the 4-second round trip time. But the next call that's immediately after it is sent to another one. And therefore, all this invocation of the web service, right, which is decoding the signals from the brain, can be interleaved, right? And as a result, we have a very responsive application. And therefore, in summary, some of the things that we've seen in this initial operationalization work is dealing with warm-up, making sure that the web service are warm-up, or sufficiently warm-up is important to reduce the or to improve the response time. Having multiple endpoints, as we're sharing with you here in this slide, is important as well. But the third really begets the question on, hey, you know, you created a predictive experiment using Azure Machine Learning. Now, you have a control of what goes into the predictive experiment and whether the predictive experiment can be simplified such that it's more responsive to this invocation, and whether some of this processing can be pushed into things that is feeding the machine learning or the public machine learning model. In this case, can we do a lot of the aggregations, a lot of the windowing, using a technology like Stream Analytics, which is invoking machine learning? Now, all this leads you to having very responsive application, right? Or more importantly, giving you very responsive, intelligent application, leveraging Azure Machine Learning. So this just gives you a very quick perspective of what does it mean to operationalize the model that Ye was sharing earlier. And next, I'm going to hand it over to Hung, who's going to say, hey, you know, we share with you, you know, the brain, how we're collecting data from the brain, how we're working with the neurosurgeons on decoding signals from the brain. Ye share with you how, you know, what are the challenges when we took the MATLAB code, right, and converted it to R so that we can leverage Azure Machine Learning and operationalize it. And I share with you, well, you know, from an architecture perspective, how should you go about thinking, operationalizing the application, right, that has to deal with a high incoming rate, right? Now, but then the question that we all ask ourselves is, well, you know, this is great science, but why does it matter, right? And Hung is going to come in and share with you, hey, why does it matter? What are the things that we are doing in order to make this available to the community? Hung, please.
Okay, thank you, Wei-Hung, for the introduction or the background. Hi, guys. I'm talking from London. I'm traveling to London this week, so if you see a long latency, that's because of the transmission of the signals from London to US across the Atlantic Ocean. So, yeah. So because of this data, the author of this data allows us to do something on this very interesting task. We feel that this is something, the task and the data is very interesting, and also it's very relevant to almost everybody. So we think that, okay, let's put it as a competition on our Cortana Intelligence competition platform. So if you look at this page, this is a competition detail page. We launched this competition at the Strata the end of March this year, and we let it go for 3 months. It has been completed in the end of last month. And so if you look at the this detail page, you can see that we during these 3 months, we this competition page received over 33,000 page views. We received over around 700 participants, and they submitted over 1,800 submissions to this competition. So we feel that this is really kind of interesting task that has been well accepted by the data science community, and especially in the computational neuroscience community. So currently, actually, to update you today, we on this detail page, if you go to that detail page, you will see the winner's announcement. We just made that announcement probably 1 hour ago. If you look, this figure shows you the highest public score over time since the launch of this competition. You can see that the competitors, the participants, are making steady progress over time. And we set for this competition, we set up a performance threshold at 80% accuracy. The reason why we set up that accuracy because the accuracy we got from the benchmark model by Dr. Kai Miller in that paper on these four patients is around 83%. So we hope that the participants should be able to at least reach 80% in order to claim the award. So from this chart, you can see that there is a red horizontal line here. That's the 80% performance bar. So from this chart, you can see right after 1 month after the launch of this competition, this performance bar was broken. So, and in the end, very surprisingly, and very and the owner, the Dr. Kai and also his colleague in UW, they are also very happy to see that actually you see the highest performance on public data set is over 90%. So they are really interesting to see what is really happening in those winning solutions that might be able, they might be able to adopt in their future research or surgeon practice. So now let's see how many, because it's already completed this competition, so we can see how many participants we can we received and where they are from. From this world map, you can see that the top 5 countries are United States, India, Argentina, UK, and Canada. The participants distributed all over, almost all over the continent. We have North American, South American, Australia, Asia, and Europe. So there is really a party for the worldwide neural data scientists. So if you look at the how the daily submissions and daily unique submitters or participants, you can see this is the distribution over time. The top bar chart is the number of submissions we received on a daily basis. The bottom one is the number of unique participants who submitted solutions to our platform on a daily basis too. So you see that actually not surprising to me that in the last day, we see the maximal submission activity and also the maximal submitter, a number of submitters over time. So the reason why you see the this x-axis extended to July because we set up the competition, this is UTC time. And actually the competition ends at the Pacific Daylight Time at July 30th midnight. So that's the reason you see some activities on this bar chart, you see extended to July 1st. So Another thing is that for many participants, you might be thinking, okay, I just continue trying, I can get higher score. But it turned out that that's not the case. You see that from this chart, we have, we calculate the correlation between the number of submissions and the highest published score. You see that the correlation is only 0.35. There are some positive correlation there, but that's not so strong. So for, I think this is also true for many other competitions organized by Kaggle or by KDD Cups. So you really need, in order to get a high score, you really need to dive deep into the task and data and to be very creative in your, in generating, in creating your solutions. You do not say, you do not, I mean, always trying similar methodology, similar feature set, on the day on the task does not always help. So yeah, you need the creativity and the insight to the data are really key factors which can help you to win this competition. So Yi has done a great job in translating the MATLAB code into R code to build the machine learning model on this data for this task. So it in, because of her great work on your translation, it enables us to build, to set up the competition on Azure Machine Learning Competition Platform. The reason is that Azure Machine Learning is very versatile in supporting the both R and Python. So ideally, her code should be directly applicable to the in building the Azure Machine Learning experiments, because by just copy and paste her code into the execute R module, R script module in AML. But the something we have to be very careful is that we cannot, in her code, she was using some kind of third-party R libraries to in her script. But we have to be very careful when we publish this competition, especially for this competition, we need to prepare some sample training experiment. We have to avoid using those libraries, because they might the license for those libraries might not allow you to use it commercially, right? So you, if you look at this chart, you can see that this is the experiment graph in Azure Machine Learning. In Azure Machine Learning, you can incorporate any third-party libraries that even are not installed by default in the Exit Python R script module by just zip them into a zip file and add them to your execute R script module. Then you can just write some one or two several lines to install it on the fly. So we have to, for example, here in this example, the PRACMA is a library used by her script, but we cannot use it because of the license issue. So that's one challenge. Another challenge is that we have to split. In Kai's paper, he was simply using threefold cross-validation. Basically, the every 100 visual stimulation presentation cycle is put into one fold, and then use the 201 to 300 as the validation, and use the 1 to 200 similar cycle as the training, and then move on to use the 101 to 200 as the validation, and the remaining as the test and the training. So when we prepare the data for the competition, we have to split the data into training and testing. And we cannot test the speed of data, say, by just let the last 300 stimulus, the last 100 stimulus cycle for each patient as the testing, because the sequence of face and house in each 100 stimulus cycle are the same. So in this way, if you do not do any shuffling, a shuffle of the sequence, people, the participants can easily know, okay, so they do not even need to build any model. They can just directly submit the sequence they learned from the training data, they can get 100% accurate. So that means we have to shuffle the sequence of the stimulus type in the testing data. So that's the second challenge for setting up this competition. Now go to the next one. Okay, so the competition has been successfully completed and we received a very good result to tackle this decoding brain signal competition for human perceptions. So what kind of competition contribution we are making to the neuroscience and biomedical research? First of all, we provide a cloud-based brain-machine interface solution. The winning solution can be operationalized because it is a web service API on cloud. So one thing we want to call out is that the winning solution in the competition was organized by us in the Cortana Intelligence Competition Platform because they are web service API. They are not just a CSV file. So all this web service API can be directly operationalized into any product platform. You already see just now that the Weihang has already integrated one of my web service API I created into a product he built for the demo, right? And also, we are advancing the neuroscience by leveraging the machine learning. The winning solution might achieve better accuracy than neuroscientists. We have already seen that one, right? They have already achieved over 10% higher accuracy than the benchmark done by the author of the paper, Dr. Kai Miller. And the winning machine learning solutions can help identify critical features from ECOG signal that can advance our understanding on brain decoding. So, I guess soon after we announce the winners of this competition, the winners are going to publish their solution either in GitHub, in both GitHub and in the gallery of Asia Machine Learning Studio. So the author of the paper, Dr. Kai Miller and his colleague in UW are going to look into those solutions to see how much they can learn from that one in order to promote their future research and practice. And the machine learning solutions might provide other insights to the mechanism of brain coding. So those are the impact we are thinking that can generate for the neuroscience. So in summary, Asia Machine Learning enables you to build powerful intelligent application. So we have shown that Asia Machine Learning is versatile enough by enabling Python R so that you can translate other languages you have in other applications into Python R and implement as a cloud-based solution in AML. Actually, for your information, she's working on translating SAS into R. I think that's another example of the versatility of the Asian machine learning. And the knowledge in specific domain can be advanced through competitions. So we have already seen that the winning solution of this competition is way ahead of the benchmark we have so far. So yeah, I think that's pretty much everything we have in this webinar. So we are happy to answer questions if you have any.
Hey, Hang, I think there was a question that says one of the slides shows only a portion of the experiment. So will we, will the audience be able to get the whole experiment? Will you be sharing it via the gallery?
Here's the thing. So for your information, even the competition has already completed, we are planning to open a new tutorial competition using the same data and same task. So this new tutorial competition can last for over, say, 1 year or 2 years. So you are free to go to tutorial competition. Of course, tutorial competition, there is no award for that, right? But you can always play with it to see how far you can go on this task and how whether you can beat the winning solution. In this tutorial competition, if you click enter competition, the sample experiment I was mentioning in my slide, that's the partial graph, will be automatically copied to your workspace. You will get that.
Yep. And then I think on a related question is some of the audience was asking, hey, you know, would the winning entry be shared online and would the organizers be sending out the link to where the winning entry is so they can learn from it?
So the winning solution, they are going to publish their solution in the gallery. So you will be able to get it. And also they are publishing their Python code in GitHub. So it's all public.
Sounds good. The next question is, when you were looking at the competition score, did you try calculating the Spearman correlation on the submission versus high score data?
I did not. So I was just calculating a simple using Excel to calculate the correlation. So there's another one. Are you going to speak about the actual experiment, the actual predictions using Azure? So yeah, so that's a very similar question as I answered before. So we are going to publish, we're going to launch another tutorial competition with this sample training experiment. So you will get, if you click enter, you will get this sample training experiment. So any others? Okay, so I guess that's it.
Thank you very much
for attending. And for your information, if you go to the studio, the gallery of Azure Machine Learning, you will see other competitions going on. Currently, we have another second competition going on, and we are planning to launch more. So keep watching the competition on that gallery, and try to play with it to win some money.
Great. Well, thank you all for the great presentation. And to the audience, as a reminder, we'll be sending out the slides and the recording of the session shortly. Thank you all for joining us, and have a great day.
Thank you.